And Lourdes, I'm so thrilled to see you again. I saw you when you were here for the World Sleep Society meeting last time and really enjoyed your lecture. So, for the rest of you, if you don't know her, she's an MD, PhD, MS, and sleep physician and professor of family and community medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, at the Fresno location. And she spent her entire professional career expanding the boundaries of sleep health. She's been involved in Haiti as part of the 2010 Earthquake Relief Program and also the director of a 2020 World Sleep Day initiative to improve children's sleep in the community of Haiti. In 2013, Dr. Del Rosso traveled to the Dominican Republic with a global outreach team of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to train community health workers. In California, she's trained community health workers in early intervention program for children younger than 5 years old. And she's also been active in global sleep initiatives, such as the 2019 Latin American Symposium on Diversity and Inclusion, the 2020 Symposium on Global Sleep Medicine, and in recent years, as the co-chair of the World Sleep Day Committee. Her commitment to global sleep health and to the World Sleep Academy in particular is profound and touches everyone around the globe. Dr. Del Rosso, could you load your slides and off we go.
Thank you. Thank you for the kind introduction. Thank you, everyone who is attending and everyone who is seeing after this is going to be recorded. I also had the wonderful privilege to work, to share appointments at the same time with Steve. And I was privileged to sit together in the same rooms at the University of Washington and be faculty there. So it is amazing. Thank you, Steve, building a friendship and a long-lasting collaboration. So, with that, I am going to start. I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to start the presentation. And we're going to talk about global sleep health and how we're going to bridge science to address disparities and to see a wonderful future for sleep medicine. Some of the aims that I have today, and I'm going to try to do them in the next, 40, 45 minutes, is to highlight what is some of the emerging research and evolving ideas about sleep and about sleep, total sleep, and what are we doing in terms of sleep disorders, and what are the contextual shifts that are shaping. And if I say contextual shift, we're going to be learning about what that means for our communities. We're going to also identify and understand what and how do we measure sleep health disparities, examining structural, geographic, socioeconomic, and other inequities that we have in various disorders. And we're going to see how we, wherever we are in our own region, in our own area of expertise, how can we propose actionable strategies, develop policies, develop communication messages, build capacity, and have global collaboration to advance the equitable access to diagnosis, treatment, and expertise of sleep medicine globally. So I am going to start by saying and starting bridging the science. What is the science of sleep and what do we know? And very, very briefly, I did a search on the term just sleep, and we found over 111,000 publications. And if you look at the date of the publications, they start in 1945. And we have so much, and you can see the curve. And thankfully, the science is advancing, the publications are growing. But we can't forget that there is work all the way down to 1945. So, who was working in sleep before a lot of us were even born in 1945? So, who were those people working in sleep medicine? Well, this publication in July 1945, Further Progress in the Control of Sleeping Sickness in Nigeria. This is a disease that we rarely talk, and it is within our expertise, African sleeping sickness. I was just talking to my sleep fellows about it. We all should know about it. But there was a publication in 1945, and of course, there's a lot of publications after that. We have publications in Russian, several publications in Russian. Look at this, 1946, Duration and Depth of Sleep, by a colleague from Buenos Aires in Spanish. We're talking about sleep and triphasia in men in Dutch. We have other publications in French. We have German. This is a person also Acta Neurobiologica Latinoamericana, Latin American publication on neurophysiological mechanisms of wakefulness and sleep in 1964. And we have epidemiological studies also in Spanish, Mexican Salud Pública. So why am I bringing this? Because we tend to believe that Europe and America have the bulk of the knowledge in sleep publication, science, and expertise. And I wanted to bring awareness that very, very early in the beginning of sleep science research, we have global publications from all over the world. Here we have position statements from Asian Society. This is a publication in Japanese that I had to actually translate in English. We have position statements from African societies, African groups about the past, present, and future, and publications stating the number of research up to the year of the publication in various countries in Africa, the number of publications in countries in Latin America. If we are seeking global equity in sleep medicine, sleep treatment of disorders, and sleep education, we need to hear and listen what is done globally. I have pledged myself, this is a personal decision, not to attend any congress, conference, society that has in its title the name global, that does not have invited speakers, keynotes, or representatives from Latin America, Africa, and other underrepresented, maybe Asian, sleep societies. So it is important that us as sleep experts set the expectation forward to include and to learn about what are people doing in sleep in these other areas. What is the science? What are they finding in their communities? Guess what? Now we have a lot of issues with immigration, with growth in different areas, and we need to learn from each other. As I'm going to talk later, we need to open communications with everywhere. So let's understand what is health equity and health inequalities. And I am going to focus more on sleep, and these are terms that probably you all know. But to bridge disparities, we need to review equity, inequalities, and how do we monitor health inequalities in the world and in our world of sleep medicine. When we talk about equity, is the absence of unfair, avoidable, or remediable differences in health among population groups that are defined by social, economic, demographic, or any other geographic characteristics. So if there is something that I can do to avoid it, that I need to do, or else I am contributed to social injustice or inequity. Health inequities are measurable, and there are differences in health across population in subgroups. So if I look at life expectancy, that's measurable. If like life expectancy in some area is 65, in an older is 85, I need to know why there is this discrepancy and disparity in these different populations. And how do we monitor? Well, we monitor providing evidence of who is, what is happening, what are the trends, what are the policies, and what are the programs, and how are they closing the gaps to achieve equity. This is from the World Sleep Organ the World Health Organization showing in the left the hand tilted, showing that how inequities are really avoidable. They are completely avoidable. They're preventable, and they are, by essence, unjust. And they're causing significant differences in health in our other in inhabitants of various countries. This is again from the World Health Organization talking about how health and equity is influenced by different conditions of daily living, including economic systems, structural systems, and major trends in climate changes and global aspects. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. This is not going to be a lecture basically on social determinants of health. I promise you that it's going to include that, but you're going to be surprised about some of the findings. So how can we, as sleep experts, sleep practitioners in various areas of expertise and various areas of the world, How can we assess these gaps and contribute to disappearing these gaps in sleep health? Well, the first step is to analyze what are the contextual shifts in sleep health. And by contextual shifts, I mean what is happening. What is happening in terms of demographic shifts? And demographic shifts can be we have an aging population, we have a population that is gaining more weight, we have a population that is having or developing more chronic diseases. What are sociocultural shifts in certain countries or certain societies? A sociocultural shift could be just social media. Social media is a big sociocultural shift that we need to take into consideration. Technological shifts is twice because we have both technology in terms of us. You see the echo electrocardiogram in one, physicians diagnosing and giving our medical knowledge in some populations. We are such an advocates for technology and technological advances, but we have to also be mindful that there are areas of the world in which this technology is not advancing at the same times as in ours. But there is technology that is at the grasp of the hand of our patients, like cell phones and internet. So those are different technological shifts that are occurring and not at the same time and not in parallel sometimes in various countries. What are economical shifts? What are situations, political? There's wars, there's political strains, there's immigration laws, there's different political shifts that are occurring all over the world. And epidemiological shifts. We just had COVID. We have different epidemiological situations, pandemics, epidemics, and other disorders in different areas of the world. So all of that. You were witnessing of how during the COVID pandemic, the body of literature that has been produced about sleep and COVID does not really match what has been produced about sleep and mononucleosis, for example, of sleep and hepatitis or sleep and HIV. So we have to see what are those epidemiological trends and how is it shaping what we know about sleep medicine in different disorders. This is something I really wanted to share with you because it's been enlightening to me and to some of the colleagues that I have shared with. This is a website called Our World in Data. It's access to everybody. It's free. You can go in and you can search. You can put your country and you can search child mortality, poverty, so life expectancy, trends in obesity. You can search a lot of trends and it will actually show you trends by year. And by age, by gender, population growth, how is artificial intelligence? So this is a really important and interesting tool that I want to share with all of you to use it to learn about your countries, about your cities, about what are the actual trends that are happening and how can you look at those trends and integrate sleep into what is happening in your area. This is, for example, looking at depression. And I just wanted to use this is from that website. What I did is depression trends, and I put global. I wanted to see in all over the world. And you can see in 1990, the percentages with blue, dark blue being the highest percentage and yellow being the lowest percentage, you can see what is the prevalence of depression living, people living, actually diagnosed with depression in 1990. And what is the trend, the shift to currently or 2023? So you can see how some countries and globally there is a shift towards higher prevalence of depression in the world. And then what is really interesting is you can see what is the number of psychiatrists per 100,000 people in 2020. And then you can see this tremendous disparity on the increase in depression globally, or in at least in some regions of the world, and how the growth in psychiatrists does not match that trend. And these are very valuable tools. And I want to encourage you to use these tools to design your strategic plans for your practice, for your research, for your collaborations with colleagues. So when you see these contextual shifts, for example, I use depression as one, but we're going to see about short sleep and use of electronics and other contextual shifts. What are key questions for your epidemiological mind and your global health equity collaborations? You want to ask what shifts are happening within my context, within my community, what should health systems do? I'm sorry, the arrow goes this way. How large is the impact? So, for example, we know that there is more use of electronics, and then several societies start doing questionnaires online about how is the use of electronics impacting your sleep. So you have a shift. How is that impact society? And then you can ask other questions such as when will the impact peak? What should the health systems do, and how certain are we about this? You can ask all sorts of questions and start research and collaboration about it. Some contextual shifts that I want to tell you about, for example, that can affect sleep are demographic shifts, like I mentioned, population aging or urbanization, migration, epidemiological shift like obesity, increasing obstructive sleep apnea, the multimorbidity. Now we have coexistent on multiple chronic disorders. It's really interesting. We're doing a work on restless sleep. And when we did restless sleep in children, we were able to see patients or children that had just one condition. And when we look into adults, it's very rare not to have an adult with just one disorder. It's usually a multi-morbidity. There's interest now. We are seeing what effects are on neurocognitive decline. In terms of policy shifts, what are the policy shifts that have happened even in our lifetime? We're seeing school start times policies, work shift regulation, CPAP access. We see social cultural shifts like adolescents leave, focus on school timing, cultural attitudes globally, technological shifts, improving access through telemedicine, using artificial intelligence, technology as a sleep disruptor, and economic shift in terms of housing, shift work disorder, globalization. I mean, I just bought VPN, and I can see programs in France and in Italy or in Peru and anywhere in the world through VPN. It's just amazing, the globalization and the shifts that we're having. In the United States, for example, this is from the Centers for Disease Control. We can see these shifts about people that are not getting enough sleep. And even though the shifts are not completely dramatic in the last few years or decade, we can still see that there is a trend towards increasing sleep deprivation or insufficient sleep. So in 2013, we had 32% of women compared to 36% in 2022. 35%, 33.9 of male compared to 37. So we can still see those subtle small shifts. There's also websites you can look, and this is the goal for every country to institute in public policies information about sleep. There was one question in the CDC information data, a single question, how many hours you sleep? And I think I personally have three publications on that single question, and the CDC have published about sleep insufficient per state, for example. What are the chances to have less sleep, less than 7 hours, depending on different states? This is Steve in Washington. You're sleeping pretty good. I'm not so good here in California and in other parts of the country. But we can also see in this big data, government data, that we should be promoting in our countries, in our regions, even in our departments. I'm trying to talk here in Fresno to our public health department to assess in our census, in our public initiatives, assess questions about sleep duration and sleep quality. This is one of the publications that we did with the data from the CDC from 2022. And if you go to the website, it's public data. You can grab and download the public data from 2018, 19, 22, 23, 24, and you can analyze whichever parameters you want. This, for example, was how people in the north compared to the south, northern states and southern states, and how does sleep vary per month. So these are trends and things that you start learning by looking at this data. If you are in a northern state compared to a shorter southern state, maybe because of light, maybe because of proximity to the equator, but this we northern states tend to sleep less that southern states that are here in the north, and we can see how different months like summer are less sleep than other months with less light exposure. This is actually data from my own. It's under review. It's unpublished data. I'm just sharing it because what you can do with your data, with your devices, so you can look at seasonality. You can see during winter, spring, and summer Is there more obstructive sleep apnea? The apnea index is higher in the winter. We did over 3,000 patients or 2,000 patients, I think, from our sleep recordings, and we found obstructive apnea higher during winter. We found during the summer that there was a longer sleep latency, maybe longer light, but longer sleep wakefulness after sleep. So this, so you can do with the data, you can start looking at patterns and start learning about your population. I did this because I wanted to know how is Fresno sleeping, how are my patients in my own lab sleeping, but other people are doing the same thing. And do we know, do we want to learn from each other? How can we compare? Hey, let's talk to someone, some of our colleagues in Africa, and say, well, what data can we compare? How can we join together? How can we compare? And what parameters are we doing? Are we using the same parameters? Should we change some scoring that that is not appropriate for certain specific populations? So we have data on obstructive sleep apnea in adults in Nigeria, and we have some of the risk factors and some of the chronic conditions that are affecting, and what group of populations are higher. How does that compare with other people? We have prevalence of sleep-related symptoms in four Latin American cities, and we have very different cities. We have Mexico, we have Montevideo from Uruguay, Santiago in Chile, we have Caracas, Venezuela, and we can see that there are some important differences, you know, like excessive sleepiness, 22% in Santiago compared to Montevideo. We have symptoms of insomnia, 41% in Santiago in Chile. What is happening? Is it, you know, Dr. Brockman from Chile also published about latitude effects, and very, very interesting research these countries. So what are some of the causes of disparities in sleep health? Dr. Ceballos and Dr. Chaveri, collaborators from Central America, have just published in Sleep Medicine Clinics this fascinating article summarizing the influence of industrialization on sleep and sleep comparing with pre-industrial societies. And here, this is a diagram that they created, and they talk about all the factors that can affect our industrialized societies. And we can see, you know, sleep fragmentation, noise. We're doing a collaboration with both of them, Dr. Ceballos and Dr. Strada, about noise in their capital cities in Costa Rica and Guatemala, and what are some of the effects on short sleep in their countries. We can see effects on the respiratory system, sedentary lifestyle, consumption of certain foods that are pro-inflammatory, obesity, and other uses. So the effects of industrialization. Dr. Kamolafia, a wonderful collaborator from Africa, leader from the African network, sleeping network, and very much moving forward the sleep societies and sleep research in Nigeria and in Africa, has also published this important article. These are just published in Sleep Medicine Clinics about how geography and location can affect sleep. There's just a lot of papers. I just want to get to your curiosity. Within the United States, there's papers within zip code. You talk about zip code. So here, Dr. Kamalafi talks about rural areas compared to more urban areas, and how these geographic differences can actually not just caused by limited of specialists, by long travel distances, also by economic disparities, but also the consequences of untreated disorders. And what are some of the solutions, including telehealth, mobile clinic, and training of providers in rural areas? So very important cause of disparities. This is something that we published with my future sleep fellow, Dr. Mamata Bodapalli, who is currently a star resident and will be starting training with me next year. We published this, over 200,000 people in the United States, data from the CDC on what are some of those determinants of short sleep. And you can see here in the forest chart how education, how ethnicities, how marital status, those who have divorce or widow are more prone to have short sleep, dissatisfaction with life, low emotional support. However, how important it is to have high social connectedness, how to have a network of people that you can count on, family, tides, friends, to have a good, healthy sleep, employment, lack of employment, like employment loss, lack of employment. So it's no concern about losing your employment and no concern of losing transport or having barriers improve significant sleep. And all the other socioeconomic factors that I think that we are aware of, but this is in a large, large, over 200,000 people in the United States. Dr. Watson from University of Washington wrote this area about how technology can both benefit, but also, if not distributed equally, can be a contributor to disparities because there's cost, there's geography, there is difficulty. You know, I took this little tiny square that says international location. I'm not going to have a bias towards any company in this talk, but this little square was taken about from a company that has sleep related products. And I was looking through some websites and I was very proud of how this company has a whole list of locations in Africa, Middle East, the Americas, Latin America, North America, Asian Pacific, and Europe. And this is what we want to see. And I want to say it loud and say it again. We want to see and promote and support and endorse companies that have an eye on ending disparities in sleep medicine. I do not want to endorse companies of any type that only want to market to North America and Europe. There it is. I said it and I want to say it because technology can be an enormous disparity. If we do not have technological development in countries, if we do not have access to polysomnography, access to actigraphy, access to sleep, home sleep apnea testing, access to dental devices, access to surgeons and sleep training, dental dentists and orthodontists in all over the world. And I was very proud that a group in Peru called me a couple of days ago, the Dental Peruvian Society, to give a talk. And I actually tried to push them into talking to a dentist, one of you guys. And they say, no, we want to learn about the basics of sleep, the basic knowledge. And very proud that this is spreading and we're reaching out to all these areas with expertise. This is an article that we wrote also with one of my colleagues here at the University of California, San Francisco, Fresno, about the effects of discrimination, both witnessed and perceived. And you can see here on children how the perceived discrimination can shorten sleep by mechanisms that cause increased arousal, stress, chronic cortisol, rumination, like you go to bed, you second guess yourself, you're thinking what people are thinking, what are people doing, both at work, both in social context, increases some activation of hypervigilance and disrupts sleep, contributing to this insomnia, poor sleep quality, and other mechanisms. So this is an article I recommend. You all, I usually post my articles for everybody to have access on how the effects of discrimination. Importantly, we have, and there's been research on what are the protective buffers of discrimination. So having a good parental and teacher support in childhood. So you have a very, very strong, supportive teacher, a teacher that believes in you, like a lot of us. And I've had the blessing to have teachers and mentors who believe in me, who support me, a parent that also supports you. Also, an important cultural identity and socialization, a consistent high quality sleep pattern. So we can be all proud to say sleep and good healthy sleep fights against the effects of discrimination. And we're all blessed to be in this field that improves that. What are some disparities in sleep disorders? How can we see disparities in sleep disorders? And I'm going to be mentioning some of the articles by colleagues, Dr. Foreman, who is faculty in the World Sleep Academy, dear friend, alumni from the World Sleep Academy as well, is leading a group of teaching on health and in insomnia. And he wrote this chapter on how there are disparities in the recognition of insomnia, which is underreported in men, in minorities. There's misattribution to stress or to mood disorder. You can sleep. There's always some people who believe there's got to be a secondary cause or there's got to be something. Is misdiagnosed, undertreated, delayed treatment. And there is, and I want to say this, that there is a underused and under utilization and training on CBTI when CBTI is proven to be the long treatment, scientifically proven to be the first line and the good long-term treatment for insomnia. So we need to work on expanding telehealth and digital CBTI training professionals in that. Sleep disorder breathing, a colleague from Dr. Alcibiades Rodriguez from New York, he wrote with some other collaborators a chapter on disparities in sleep disorder breathing. And we can say how we still are learning about the genetics, the anatomy, and how socioeconomic status and trust in certain populations can affect or delay treatment. Language barriers, sleep education barriers, cultural understanding, promoting probably, providers that can address disorders within this framework to build areas that we can train and that we can address. For example, Spanish, Latin, dedicated pathways, like I'm trying to do a pathway in our clinic in which the patient will have a Spanish-speaking front desk, medical assistant, physician, and a lab tech. So their whole experience is going to be understanding in their own language. And that goes also for other countries. Testing, standards, also housing, smoking, but also understanding what are the differences in terms of ethnic disparities for how can we address in our populations and in terms of education and identification of risk factors and how can we help them. Restless leg syndrome, this is a chapter that I wrote with dear collaborators from Turkey and Karen Dr. Parejo from Colombia. And you can tell by the map that it is not an accurate map because we do not have prevalences in all the countries, but it is an illustrative map of how there is still a lot of disparities in what we know. And in some countries report a lot of prevalence, some countries less prevalence, but we still need to have unified education, recognition. We are still having inequities in access to care instead in terms of restless leg syndrome. We have people traveling long distances, very few sleep providers in this context that are completely comfortable, and also children. I remember diagnosing restless legs in children down to 2 years old, 1 year old, and people sometimes reviewers ask me, how do you have this paper with 10 children that are under age 5? And these are the things that we need to educate. And if any of you are going to go to the future sleep meetings, you can hear me talk about sleep, restless legs in infants, and how to recognize these challenging cases. We also have some disparities in idiopathic hypersomnia. Women, how there's longer diagnostic delays, misdiagnosis rate in children. Narcolepsy is a disorder that is diagnosed in childhood, and very often symptoms begin at age of 7 and 8, and they're not diagnosed until their 20s. And children go through school in an important time of their lives where confidence, neurocognitive, cognition, grades, all of that is developing, and they go undiagnosed with these disorders and importantly, untreated. I have to say, I sent Dr. Schenk this figure that was created with the aid of AI based on his two chapters that he wrote on underrecognition of RVD in younger populations, in women, in patients with PTSD, in patients with taking medication, and how we have developed a diagnosis bias, and how sometimes we do not really screen for REM behavior disorder. We are used to being a very much sleep disorder breathing specialty in which people are referred for a sleep study. Now in the era of home sleep apnea testing, we screen for obstructive apnea, we start CPAP, and we have a great big opportunity to ask if there's any dream enacting behavior, do a sleep study, diagnose REM with arrhythmia, REM behavior disorder, start treating, and refer to a specialist for possibly neurocognitive or long-term sequela. Women, same. Children, same. It is important. And Carlos Cheng is key. He's been the first person to describe RBD, and we're celebrating the anniversary this year. He's giving keynotes, a lot of keynotes, and you have the opportunity to hear him. Highly, highly recommended. In the next few minutes, because I would love to hear your voices, your questions, your comments, how do we bridge science to equity? And I'm going to give you some practical points. And I have one point per slide, so you can go back and take a look at it. But it is really a list of points that I'm gonna look over. The first point starts with identifying the problem, obviously. And we talked about it. You need to know what population you're dealing. If you deal with all population with obstructive apnea, well, partner with someone in restless legs and screen your patients. If they're still not sleeping well, screen your patients, talk about them, talk about how do they live at home? What are their living conditions? What is their dust? I mean, just having a HEPA filter in your house or addressing those mold or dust can be a complete life changer. Measure outcomes. Have the outcomes in every visit. Have adherence, monitor progress, monitor your patient's well-being, your evaluation, the feedback, not just the Epworth every day, but just be sure to ask how are things in terms of other socioeconomic issues. Also, participate in policy development. As a society, you all have a great opportunity to prioritize sleep in health equity agenda in terms of policy development and develop specific areas in which you want to have changes, both at the level of state, country, globally. We can, you know, you can advocate for policy adoption, coordinate across departments of public health, housing, education, secure funding, foster community for support. Now, this is the continuum that we are used to, but this is pretty much going to be a model that is the basic starting model of sleep care. But we need to extend and go past this model. The symptom recognition, diagnosis, improvement, and treatment is the basics. But from that, it's going to blow everywhere a large, large world of other opportunities that we need. And Ceballos and Dr. Strada Chaveri also in that second chapter talked about policy development for health equity and how we can look at sleep health as our major outcome and how can we actually look at all those social structures, conditions of daily life, and participate in policy development to promote equitable access to sleep. And I'm going to tell you now, seven C's for global equity, seven C's. And I'm going to start. This was one slide, and then I figured this is too much. This is why these are fragments of one big chart. But I'm going to talk about one very briefly. I'm going to go through the seven, and then we're going to conclude, and I'm going to listen to you. First, you need to know the context. What is your neighborhood? What are your patient populations? Maybe, you know, you may say, well, I don't have much diversity in my country. Well, if you have women, there's their diversity. You have women and men, different problems. If you have children, there's there a lot of diversity, different age groups. So know the context of your patients. Where do they live? I had to learn a lot about Fresno and the environment, the air quality, the higher risk of valley fever and all of that, and start learning and how can I help that population in terms of sleep and how can we address the disparities? What are opportunities to change? But first, the C number one, know your context. Second, know your challenges. The world is not perfect. That's why, we have challenges, but it's good that we know them. What are some challenges within your community? What are some challenges with your patient populations to be compliant, to trust, to economics, having money to pay for devices, having, what are the challenges within your community? And knowing your challenges are going to give you opportunities to look into funding, policies. Maybe we need certain things to be covered that are not covered. So know your challenges is key. Design interventions. So in your mind, you have your problem, you have your challenges. Well, what can I do? One thing, you can develop a teaching program, you can develop a community-based program, you can have opportunities in within your community. So develop content. Number four, develop coalitions. Build a diverse stakeholder coalition. This is what we're doing here, right? We're meeting each other. We're co collaborating. We're talking to each other. So I have my dearest friends from all over. I'm so blessed to know Dr. Komolafi personally from Africa, Dr. Karen Parejo, Dr. Ceballos and Estrada from Central America, my colleagues, my dear colleagues in Peru, in Asia. I mean, you build this coalition and then you call someone and say, look, let's work on this together. Let's write this policy and we can empower our communities better. This is important for us. And I actually have a whole slide on communication. Because we live in a world in which there's so much miscommunication, I look online and everybody's teaching something and not everything is evidence-based, that you need to have good, accurate, scientific-based, clear communication about sleep. And this is on us to do it. Capacity. And this is what Steve and I are doing in the World Sleep Academy, right? We're building capacity to improve world sleep health. We're building capacity. We're training people all over the world. We are open to teach anybody and everybody who wants to start and develops a sleep program in their country. We need to build capacity. We need to build capacity in areas that are underserved in the United States. We need to train a diversity of clinicians. Psychologists, everybody, physical therapists. I have good partners in Fresno State, physical therapy, everyone. We need to have partners and build capacity in sleep. And seven, the last C, cohesiveness. We need to get together. We need to work together. There's no competition in sleep. We all win. When the waves go up, we all win because when our healthy patients are happy, are healthy, and they're going to advocate for sleep in every area of the world, we need to have a cohesive program. We need to have cohesion between clinic, within research, within our systems accountability, between the government policies and our health systems. And our operational societies, the important leaders in the society. We have to have, that's my last seat. This is my single slide on communication because I really believe communication is very important. The way we post in social media, or the way we share our personal experiences, the way we train others to communicate clearly, unify, single message, but adapted to different communities. We can't be changing messages. We can't say, yes, it's okay to snore. We have to say we have to unify science-based, unified message, advocate for each other, support each other as a physicians to build trust in our patients, to tailor also the messages with socially adaptable, counter misinformation, apply sometimes storytelling, bring patients as patient advocates. And this way, we can have a future of sleep medicine that has all of these beautiful areas, collaboration with global expertise from everywhere. We can have knowledge and innovation in science. We can have wonderful outcomes of treatment, strategic communication technologies and methods, research and translational research that actually will build access for all. So this is science, communication, global expertise, building liaisons for a future of sleep health that is going to bring healthy sleep and equity for everyone all over the world. This is it. Thank you. Thank you for
Wow.
your attention.
Wow,
Amazing, Lourdes. Amazing.
yeah, that's challenging in lots of levels there, Lourdes. So thank you so much for that. I have a question about, and please, on all of you on participating, please post your questions in the chat. Anything you'd like Dr. DeRosa to address here, and if you haven't had a chance to post where you're from, please do that as well. But I have a question about, okay, how can dentists be part of this? Of course, we can do oral appliances, but that doesn't address the whole access. That doesn't address all of this need for care. To talk to us about how what you think dentists and other trained people can do.
You're asking me, Steve, how can we be a part of it? You are already a part of it. And I have participated in your meeting. Was it last year? And
Yeah.
I was listening to all the amazing presentations about just, everything about you are seeing the patients in a very much important capacity in which airway is going to be your opening door to sleep health. But it's not it. So during this airway opportunity, you have the opportunity to talk about the patients about how are they sleeping. Maybe not just obstructive sleep apnea. You have bruxism. We have anxiety about other things. We have malocclusion. You have patients who have pain or a maxillofacial pain that are affecting sleep. But within this conversation, you have an amazing opportunity to also talk about it. And we've already done it because we have already been partnering with dentists for many years. And I have patients that come to me from the dentist that say, well, my apnea is really well, but my dentists say that because I toss and turn, I should see you. And we've already dealt with everything about my apnea, my bruxism, my malocclusion, everything about that. But my dentist says that I still probably could optimize in this other area, or that I still have night terrors in spite of that. So I think all of us do our little within our little area, we have a huge opportunity to address all the other sleep disorders as well and partner, because I think in a perfect world, I miss our meetings so much. I wish I had a dental specialist within our meetings. And I think that it is so important in training programs, in university-based and in multidisciplinary clinics to include a dental professional in these conferences and in case series, in case discussions to talk about how can we approach from different areas.
So you mentioned something I want to underscore there, and that is dentists. If you're out there treating people with sleep apnea with appliances, great, yay, good for you. Get their symptoms under control, get their oxygen levels up, get their snoring taken care of. But don't forget to pay attention, right? Because that's the way you're going to pick up the short sleep. You're going to pick up the other issues that your colleague over there in medicine can address that you can't. Don't be afraid to ask questions because there are people out there to help.
And you actually have something called a sits test in your office without even knowing it, because you have a person sitting quietly. And if you start seeing them fidgeting with the legs, just send them to us, right?
Ah,
Just
there you
like,
go.
oh, you're fidgeting there with your legs. Any symptoms of restless leg syndrome? And they will be amazingly impressed because you are a dental sleep specialist.
Are there screeners for that short sleep?
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Pat. One more. Are there screeners available for to pick up short sleep like you had all your research?
All that research, Steve, was published with data from the CDC where they only ask how many hours do you sleep? And it was just as simple, how many hours, six, seven. And we're reproducing that with some colleagues in, we have some work in Latin America that they're reproducing certain questionnaires like that. How many hours do you sleep? And then correlate it with what are some of the other aspects that may be associated with short sleep.
Just as we're getting towards the end, coming from the perspective that I work, since I, do sleep psychology, so, and I think that this psychosocial piece is very often left out of the equation, globally. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts on bringing in more of the as we're trying to get access to care globally in all demographics, using things like the school system, the school psychologists, the school to try and screen and get, observe children in situ in other than their home, where they can help rota them towards appropriate care and management. How that could be really beneficial, I mean, not only in the dental world, but also in the medical world as they try and get out of their silos to work together as a collective.
Absolutely. And this is where we can be the key advocates in our cities to talk with schools, to give these talks, to train the psychologist in school. Because I am also, I also know that sleep per se as a training, the way the sleep has really developed really fast in the last decade is not necessarily within the full spectrum of training with general psychology. So we have psychologists that train specifically in sleep, but I think that talking to school system, talking to, colleges, I think it's a great opportunity. And I, again, this is an opportunity to partner with psychologists, which I believe are an invaluable part of the team. And again, in any multidisciplinary sleep clinic or world, it is of utmost importance to partner with psychologists. And yes to all your comments. I think that if we have the opportunity to have that initiative to go to the schools, to advocate, to talk to the school leadership and give talks, training sessions, that will be wonderful.
Well, I think, from my perspective is, of course, my daughter teaches at an inner city school, for instance, and she can spot a kid with sleep apnea from down the block at this point. She's been doing it for a long time, and I'm sure part of it is by osmosis. Me talking about this for 30 years around her. But the problem also lies in the fact that the children that she sees that she desperately wants to get help from have no access to care by virtue of the fact that either they are underinsured or have no insurance at all. And I don't think that that's just a US thing. I think that's globally.
Yeah,
You know, I'm
absolutely.
part of fixing this and going together, would you say, is also trying to fix the financial piece of it, having sleep therapy care, whatever, that everybody tries to silo into one area that's this is dental, you have this problem. It's like, no, it should be universal health care that covers all systems of the body, top to bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I don't think that, I mean, are you seeing so you're more global than I, but you see that around the world where you are, South America, Europe, wherever. Would you say that? It's universal, or are there certain countries that do this way better than we do?
Well, I am sure that there's a diversity of ranges in terms of access to psychology, and access to care. But
Fair, yeah.
in that sense, whether the access is also trained in sleep, that is a different question. So I think it's important for everyone in their own local societies to address this globally. So we have global societies or in international societies in their countries to maybe start thinking about how can they be advocates for integration of all the specialties, the subspecialties that address sleep program problems into their policies and into their initiatives.
Great. Well, that's wonderful. And folks, we really appreciate your time, your energy. Some of you folks are up in the middle of the night, so we sure appreciate that. But I'd get up in the middle of the night to hear you talk. So
Thank
all
you.
good. We really look forward to the World Sleep Society. You meet the next meeting, and we'd love to have you come back and speak further on topics. I especially love your lecture on ADHD and restless leg. That I found absolutely fascinating and very prescient. And so we can't thank you enough. And Steve, I'll let you say the final goodbyes, but we really appreciate you coming, taking your time, and being so good to us and really helping to educate, all of the people who aren't here tonight, but who will log in and watch this again later on.
Well,
Thank
before
you.
you go, you got to talk about World Sleep Day.
Yep, go ahead.
Yes, well, World Sleep Day is coming in March, and I want to invite everyone to have initiatives. Things are posted online. I am actually they're going to be recording some. We have recorded some invitations, so just keep an eye online. Follow me in LinkedIn. I just love to see the posts, the comments in LinkedIn. It's my favorite network because it is where my sleep friends are. So you'll be seeing a lot of updates on that.
So where do
Thank
they
you.
get those announcements? Where do they look for things that are happening?
Yeah, in my name, and then for the World Sleep Society in the worldsleepsociety.org.
There we go. That's what I wanted you to say. Thanks. Well, and thank you. I'm going to rush out and get that sleep medicine clinics number 21 because you used a lot of resources out of that. That just looks
Absolutely.
fascinating to me, Lourdes. And thank you so much for taking your time and spending it with the world here again. Is part of your mission. It's so fun to hang out with you and watch that passion. So thank you again for being here with us.
Much appreciated. Thank you so much. Good night, everybody. We'll
Thank
see you
you. Good
next
night.
time.
Thank you.
All
Thank you
right.
so much.
Again, thank
Thanks
you.
for that.